Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 298 of Dogcast Radio. If you've ever thought you'd like to be a dog trainer, this episode is for you. And if you would like to be a dog trainer, well, I think you should listen to Melissa McHugh McGrath first, especially if you're thinking, I love dogs, but I hate people. Because there's no getting away from it. Dealing with dogs involves dealing with people. In this interview, Melissa talks with humour and honesty about her job, her professional and personal experiences with dogs, and the changes she's seen in the dog world. I first interviewed Melissa back in 2015. I can't believe it's been that long. And it was great to catch up with her again. Here we go. Hi, Melissa.
Hey, Julie.
Hi. And we talked first back in, I can't believe it, but 2015. So we're
it's
old friends.
Minute, yeah.
I know, I can't believe it. And I just want to tell people, when we met that first, well, when we interviewed, we met online that first time, your daughter was like a toddler, and
yeah. And
you said she's having her afternoon sleep, I'll have a couple of hours, you know, free, we'll do it then. And I think within the first 5 minutes she wandered in, didn't she? And it was just but that was our first live music on Dogcast Radio.
she's a little musician. She actually did she was 3, maybe 4. She was very small.
Yeah.
And she's now almost 14, and so very not small anymore. And funny enough, she's also having an afternoon sleep because she's homesick from school.
Bless
so I think we can only schedule these when my daughter's napping.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was thinking, because I was going to say, but this time I have a baby, but it's four-legged and a Labrador called Rocky, but I'm fairly sure he won't wander in and play musical instruments.
You know what? I'm never going to say never.
I know. Nothing in life is 100%. There's no guarantees, but you know.
And if he does, my God, would this interview blow up?
Wouldn't it? Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Oh, dear. I know. I've always remembered that with great affection. Then we spoke again in, it would have been 2020, wouldn't it? About dog behaviour in lockdown and beyond. Because, I mean, that was a huge issue because we just could not socialise dogs as we would normally do.
Or people.
true.
We were all, I think we all learned a lot about ourselves in that period of time, for better or worse. But yeah, I mean, there were so many unknowns at the beginning of those COVID lockdowns. And what was interesting to me and still is, and I'd be curious about like if there's any research in the aftermath of it that talks about like how the UK handled COVID and lockdown situations. Because if I was following correctly, you guys would open up and then close down a bit and then open up and close down, whereas we just stayed shut down for over a year or about a year. And then others stayed in lockdown until after vaccines, which was our case. And so like for us, it was almost 2.
Yeah.
And like just not really having the same accessibility or like being able like sitting in yards. And I recently posted on social like, Maine in spring and I'm outside with all this melting snow. There's a river in front of our front door. And so I put a lawn chair and an umbrella out there. I put on a bikini top and I had my wellies on, drinking a pretend. It was just like club soda with like some color in it, but just made it look like I was drinking a tropical drink. But like trying to meet with your friends outside in the dead of winter. Twice.
Yeah, it was tough, wasn't it?
It was rough. Yeah, and so then our dogs, like all these people were getting dogs, and that was something that was on people's radar, especially in animal behavior and training. Like we were all talking about, like, what about these COVID puppies? What about these COVID dogs? And how's this going to affect them? What are the benefits? What are the fallouts of this? And there was a lot of talk about that, but there really wasn't a lot on what really happened after. Like there was a lot of hypothetical and there was a lot of theorizing, but I don't know if anybody ever went back and studied that. And if they did, I want to hear all about it.
Yeah. Well, if anybody knows of any studies, research into that, that would be interesting. But I imagine a lot of us kind of went, right, I don't want to think about that anymore. that's in the past. Because I can remember actually, I delayed having a dog. Because I knew that I couldn't. I'll give it some context.
Because yes.
Well, I've got MS and
And my mum lives with us as well, and she's obviously a little bit older. And my daughter Jenny has various health problems as well. So we locked down long and hard, early and long and hard. We just went, no, we're keeping to us. And we were lucky because there were four of us in the house, and we had a dog anyway, and three cats, and space. And so the worry was always there of what happens if we catch COVID. That worry,
right?
You know, but the actual, for us, the actual isolation, the being at home, well, it wasn't isolation because there was four of us, but you know, it was quite, that bit was quite nice to just go, we're staying home. My husband was lucky enough to be working from home. So it was lovely for us, apart from having to delay getting a dog. But, you know, that would have been, I mean, we had Mischief. She saved my sanity. She's Jenny's dog, but she has saved my sanity, that dog, at least three times. You know, she's, bless her.
And every time I see her on social, I just light up because I love that little dog.
Yes.
I do. Like, I have clients' dogs who have a special place in my heart and everything. I have never met your dog, but like Mischief has like a huge chunk of my heart.
Bless
like,
you. Thank you. Well, yeah. I love Captain. And will you tell us, please, about, yeah. I ask you this every time, but will you tell us about, it's Captain's name. Tell us about
sure.
I love that. I just love that.
So that same daughter who was your instrumental ist that day, around the same time as that interview, we ended up acquiring a dog whose name in the rescue was Calvin. And Calvin is also my best friend's son's name. So we knew we were going to be changing the dog's name because my jerk friend wouldn't change her son's name. How
some
rude.
People. So awkward.
Know, right? I thought we were friends. But anyway, so like we get this dog and we're going through this process of trying to name him. And my daughter's like very small. She's like three. And she had come up with some interesting names like soap and light bulb. And I had some names that I wanted, and my husband had some names. So we were like, okay, well, we'll let the kid name the dog. And then she, up until the morning we went to get him, his name was Soap.
Oh.
And I'm like, I do not want a dog named Soap. But okay, we're going to have a dog named Soap. The internet had spoken. I put a poll out. Everybody thought Soap was the best idea. So I'm like, okay. The morning we go to get him, she crawls into bed with me in those big baby blues, just staring at me with a cherubrious little baby face. And she's like, Mama, his name is Captain Love. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I am not going to yell this at the dog park. I am not going to yell Captain Love come at the dog park like I'm a fan of 70s pornography.
Yes.
I did not say that to my three-year-old. I was thinking that, and I have said it to everyone else since. And so while I'm like, having a hard decision to make here about, well, actually, let's go back to Soap. Soap's great. She goes, his nickname is Captain and his real name is Love because I love him. And so we have a dog named Captain Love who keeps looking over at me every time I say his name, who's been with us for a little over 10 years now. And he's been the best. Like, he's absolutely lived up to that name. Every time she's sick, he's laying on top of her. During COVID, he was her buddy and her classmate. She went through a year of anxiety and challenges getting into middle school. So she was home for like 7 months and he was her partner. Dog has really been her ride or die, and they have been so tight. And we couldn't have asked for a better family dog.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He reminds me of Buddy in that we used to call Buddy, you know the room of requirement in Harry Potter, which just gives you what you need. Well, we used to call Buddy the dog of requirement, because whatever you needed him to do, he did it. You know, whether it was cuddle up with you because you're poorly, go for a walk, rise to the occasion, and because I wanted to write about things with him, do some training or a competition or whatever. He was just brilliant. And Captain strikes me as the same, because whatever you need him to do, he's doing it.
He's game for it. He's a game and willing dog, and he will do it with utmost comedy and and spunk as he can pull off. And actually, like with the dog of requirement, like he's now doing invasive species education across the state of Maine. But like the work that he did on invasive species, Ace, my daughter, was the one who put him on that odor. Like, because I was teaching five other students and we put Captain in the study, but I couldn't handle him and teach at the same time. So I would teach and she would Zoom in with him and she would do the work from home.
Brilliant.
And teach him how to do this too. So yeah. Now he now goes around the state of Maine and now New Hampshire and Massachusetts talking about how dogs use their nose. So he gets to go into middle schools and libraries and museums and and on podcasts like this and be able to use him as a conduit to talk about how cool dogs are,
yeah.
but also to serve as a warning for like invasive species that Absolutely. Are going to decimate our environment.
Absolutely. I mean, it's brilliant. And I have to say, I've discovered scent work and how good it is for our dogs mm. in so many ways because, you know, Rocky's a Labrador, he's only 4 months old. But I'm going to do scent work with him, some trailing, man trailing, or pet training,
oh, yes.
because... He can do it. He can walk. It's just like a walk with a lot of sniffing. So it will tire
yes.
him out. Yeah, get his brain working, get his nose working, all those brilliant things. And won't damage his growing skeleton and muscles any more than a little poddly walk. So, you know, which is what we do.
Brilliant.
I would say, we go out, we do a little poddle. Not a long walk, just a little poddle.
Sorry, well, seeing the big puddles you have, I wouldn't say it's a little...
Yeah, this is true.
Like a certifiable river.
Yes. Well, oh, no. And he loves water, obviously, and I'm not so keen on it. So, I've just posted something where I was trying to get across a stream, a video of me trying to get across a stream with him. And I wasn't, and people were going, stupid footwear. It was stupid footwear because I wasn't expecting to paddle and I wasn't expecting to, you know, to be in the woods. It was just a spur of the moment. Let's go into the woods. And I knew it was going to be. That there was a risk I would fall in. So I said to Mr. Dogcast, just video, just in case. I'm not falling in if we're not videoing. You know,
but if I do fall in, we have it on camera.
Yeah, hell yeah. If I fall in, we're videoing this, mate. So, yeah. But, and it's been a while, you know, since I've had a dog that wanted to go in the water because we got two little dogs and they're not that into water, whereas Rocky is just like, great, let's go in the water. So I'm stocking up on old towels again and, you know, I need... Oh,
mops.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So many mops.
Yeah. Yeah.
Candles.
Yes.
Get the wet dog smell out of your house.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I quite like... See, I'm strange. I'm gonna say now. This is gonna sound really, really weird. But when I was little, not this bit. When I was little, we used to go to my aunt's house. It was actually my great aunt because it was my granddad's sister, and she always had dogs. She had a basset hound, and she had a bulldog, and she had a boxer. She had a macaw, and she had a cat, and all kinds of things. I loved her.
Goals.
Oh, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. The macaw used to nest in the pantry. It was a dream house for me. And it was wonderful. But I do remember the basset particularly would fart a lot. So there was this aroma of dog fart. And it's strange, but even now, dog fart and chocolate biscuits, you know, the smell, takes me back to Auntie Mark's. I know how weird that is. But to me, it's a wonderful smell and it's a magic time. And I'm just like, oh, I'm back at Auntie Mark's. I know I'm a weird person.
Oh, eau de pew.
Yes.
And chocolate?
Throw it in. I know.
Oh my gosh, that's brilliant. But I mean, it just goes to show in humans, our sense of smell is so awful compared
yes.
to what these dogs can do.
Yeah.
And yet they can, the sensory memory of just being taken back to a time. For me, it's... the wet, like right after like in a 90 degree Fahrenheit day.
Yeah.
And the wet rain, like a quick shower hits the pavement,
yeah.
that particular odor mm. brings me back to like playing soccer as like a seventh grader,
yeah.
Like a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
Or like just like little odors that you catch and you're like, oh, that break, like it's just so tied to our sense of memory and
yeah.
self, and
yeah.
it's really cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It intrigues me when I can smell something and I go, oh, and I'm taking back to childhood and I don't know why. What
yes!
Is, yeah, and you go, what
yeah,
was
yeah.
that? Because it took me right back to childhood, but I don't know what it was. And that's how dogs must live, isn't it?
Right? And so, like, one thing that I've learned, so I'm doing this this really cool course through Grisha Stewart Academy,
yeah.
So she invited me to teach a six-week class, but it's not just, here's how you do it. Here's how you train to odor. It's like each week is a different facet of scent work.
Brilliant.
So like one is like using scent work for behavior.
Yeah.
For behavior challenges. So that was this last week. Next week is operational handling and like saving the environment, like finding missing people, arson detection dogs, stuff like that. So like, but, and then they each have homework each week with their own dogs at home to hit whatever target they want to hit. So it's a very inclusive thing. And while I was researching for this, because I'm basically the professor here, I probably should have brought some knowledge. One of the coolest things I discovered in prepping for this was that dogs have their occipital lobe, their visual sense, is directly connected to their olfactory lobe in their brain. And their olfactory lobe is 40% larger than ours. So that I smell it and I see it are connected in a really cool way. And to our knowledge, they're the only animals that do that. And I will put this on the record. I do not believe that that is actually true. To our knowledge, I believe that is true.
Yeah.
But I would not be surprised if there are more prey animals that depend on scent for survival would also have a similar connection between the occipital lobe and like catching odor on the wind and survival and being able to see it in their head and then act appropriately. So but I always just thought that was so cool. Like that was a fact for me while I was like, I love being a teacher because I get to stumble on things like that and then I get to learn. Yes. And that's so cool.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's amazing. It's just amazing that the more you learn about dogs, well, the more I learn about dogs, the more I'm like, wow, they're amazing. They're incredible. And I get to live with one, well, three, you know?
Right? Yeah. I mean, they can smell colors. When we say that, somebody's like, lay off the drugs. They just do it.
Absolutely. I always, like at the moment, whenever Rocky stops, well, any of them stop and sniff, you know, a snowdrop or something, or a daffodil, I'm thinking, oh, I wonder what that smells like. I wonder what spring smells like to a dog.
So I tell my students that it is very possible that our dogs can smell spring 2 weeks before we see it.
Wow.
Because they can smell all of those hormonal and chemical changes in the bulbs of your daffodils or your tulips or whatever. They can absolutely smell that and know that it's coming. Yeah. They can smell 40 feet under our feet. So that's four basketball nets straight into the earth that they can smell easily, detect.
Wow.
And so this time of year with spring, you've got moles and voles and critters running around under the ground. They're pooping, they're eating, they're having babies, whatever. Your dog can hear it and they can smell it. And so when we're like, dog, come, and they're sniffing grass and we're like, dude, it's just grass.
Yeah.
To them, they're having like an entire olfactory experience.
Yeah.
And probably auditory too, because they can hear at 75 feet what we hear at 20.
Wow.
So if we're 20 feet away from someone, your dog could be more than three times that behind you, almost four times further back, and pick up the same auditory input.
Wow.
So I have no doubt that they can see, air quotes for the audio listeners, but to see spring long before we see those first green sprouts.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That's incredible. It also conjures up, you know, when you kind of go, oh, come on. What are you sniffing? There's nothing there. Come on. Actually, the dog's looking at you going, how stupid are you? Can you not, you know, do you not see?
There's
X, Y, Z. Like you said, there's a mole. There's whatever. And they're looking, they must be looking at us going, you're not aware of anything. You're not.
You're so oblivious, stupid human.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, dear.
It's so cool.
Yeah, I suppose we should talk about your book because...
Oh, that'll do.
Yeah. I think there was a point to us getting together.
And just to chat because I miss you.
I know. I miss you too. So it's called The Misadventures of the World's Okayest Dog Trainer. Now, obviously, the dog trainer that comes up with the best titles because I love that title.
Isn't it fun?
Yeah, I love that.
I was actually inspired. The title kind of came from this singer-songwriter in the States who I've loved since I kind of started developing a sense of what kind of music I like. His name is Josh Ritter. Hmm. He's like kind of an Americana folk singer-songwriter guy. And he did a tongue-in-cheek album called It was called The Historical Conquests of Josh Ritter. Hmm. And it was like one of his like first albums that came out. And he was on the record saying, like, I just wanted something so grandiose and ridiculous that was really not true. Yeah. but just would like get people's attention. And, you know, being a fan of his work, and he actually had a song title called To the Dogs or Whoever. Aww. That I actually wanted to title the book. But, you know, when you're working with publishers, or you have to hit certain SEO things and whatever. So I'm like, well, I bet I could come up with something that is still kind of in the vein of like kind of tipping my hat, like that nobody else will ever know unless they listen to this podcast, like where the idea came from. But it came from that kind of idea of like, yeah, like,
yeah,
they are misadventures. That is true.
I can imagine.
But I was never going to say the world's best dog trainer. Yeah. I can't. But I thought the world's okayest would be very funny. And yeah. And
I think that's the thing, when somebody else can say, you're brilliant, you're great, you're, you know, but if you say it yourself, I think there's something, a little, you know, you can like, I, you know, I've said this so often recently, because we have our second Labrador, we have Rocky. And when I had Buddy, who was Rocky's great, 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 great uncle, I thought, I mean, I was young, I was in my 30s, and I thought, I'm a pretty good dog trainer, actually. Look at what I can get my dog to do. Yeah, look at me. And now I know I had a brilliant dog.
Yes.
And I was, exactly what you said, I was an okay trainer. And I did mm-hmm. my best. But a trainer in the sense of training my dog. I don't mean trainer. Yeah. I'm not like a dog trainer like you. But, you know, I was okay with him. I was positive and I was the best I could be. But I know. Yeah. And now with Rocky, I know that. And people, he's a very calm dog. And he often sits and watches. And so many people have said, oh, he's calm. And they say, you've got him well trained. And I've been absolutely honest. And I've said with to all of them, this is him. I have rewarded him.
Yes.
I've encouraged it. But this is him. I have not, you know, I've trained him a little bit, but yeah. And I've said, he's a good dog and I'm an okay trainer.
Yes. And I think sometimes I'll just like tell my colleagues, I'm like, you know what? Today I was just not the worst dog trainer.
That's a good aim.
Like, if I'm not the worst, then it's fine.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Now say that, the worst. Now I often say, thank goodness for dogs, because people will drive you mad, you know. And
yes.
I really feel that a lot of days. Some people will drive you mad, and I like it's this. I like your blurb, because you've said, if you've ever said, I love dogs but I hate people, this book is for you. And I guess a lot of people listening to this will have had that kind of feeling, won't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a dog trainer, and this is something that a lot of my colleagues will come, and vet friends, veterinarian friends,
yeah,
pretty much anybody in a human-facing, animal-centric industry will be faced with people coming up to them going, you're so lucky. You get to work with animals all day. And you know what? I want to do what you do. I love dogs, but I hate people. But I want to do what you do. And I have to break it to them that it's like, you have to love people as much as the dogs, because I'm not going home with these people. Like, I'm instructing them. I'm giving them tips, tricks, write-ups, videos, whatever I can do. I'm trying my best, or my not worst, to give them information that will help them work with their dog while I'm not there. So it's really on them, and I have to be compassionate, especially if you're doing behavior work.
Yeah.
That level of compassion and empathy and being able to put yourselves in shoes that you've never been in sometimes, like that are like, or even in places where it's like so easy to judge.
Yeah.
And then to like take a step back, take a beat and be like, I have to meet these people where they are. And they're doing their not worst. They're doing their best with the tools they have, the information they have, the financial situation that they're in with this dog that's in front of them. Yeah. And have they made choices that I might not agree with? Absolutely. But do they know any better? Maybe not. And that's why they're here to see me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they wouldn't be in my training space if they weren't looking for help.
Yeah.
And so that is them saying, help.
Yes.
That they're willing to take that first step. And so if I can put myself in their shoes a bit and figure out how they got to where they are, it's a little easier to be able to not judge them. Like, and I think if somebody's not into working with people, doesn't like working with people, doesn't even like people, then this is absolutely not an industry that should be considered.
Yeah.
And in the book, I do talk a lot about that, but I also have other options.
Yes.
Like, in case somebody picks it up and is like, well, I want to be a dog trainer. And then they read about all the things that happen, like all the humping, all the bodily fluids that aren't yours that you have to clean up, all of the missed dinners because you're something went horribly wrong in a dog training class and you're trying to clean up, or you know, things happen, or the emotional weight of a euthanasia case, a behavioral euthanasia case or potential euthanasia case, and doing those write-ups that just take every ounce of emotion out of you because it's that it's hard. You're carrying this weight with these people who love their dog. And if somebody's reading it and they're like, oh, actually, I don't want to do this work, there are options in there for people to also check out and explore that might still scratch that itch. Yeah. And really, when I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, there were only three options for me wanting to work with animals since I was small. And that was a veterinarian.
Yeah.
And I hate math. I'm okay at it, but I don't like it. A farmer or a police dog handler. And in college, actually, I have a chapter in here. I had gone on a ride along in Cleveland, Ohio on Halloween night with the police department and with their dog. And we were hoping we'd see a lot of really crazy stuff and everything would go down. It would be amazing. And I'd have the story that lived forever. But instead, it was really boring because it was like a Wednesday night, like, not like a Friday. And so the officer put me in a warehouse. It was like 2 a.m. It's dark. There's like one light on. The whole room is completely dusty. He's like, go into that locker room. First, walk around a bunch. And then go into that locker room, close the door, lock it, and I'm going to send the dog in after you, but I'm going to not sound like your friend here. I'm going to use this as a training exercise. So you're going to hear what the dog hears. And I'm like, okay. And so I, 18, like running around, big smile on my face, exhausted, another cup of coffee. And I closed the door in the locker room. And at this point is when I realize this is how horror movies start.
Yes.
Oh, it took me entirely too long to get to that point. And then I'm looking around and I'm like, wait, if somebody's in here, I just locked myself in with them. And there's no light. And I'm like sudden panic attack. And so I see this bench and I kind of push it also up against the door. And then I'm looking, there's dust everywhere and I don't see any footprints. So I'm like, okay, I think I'm probably fine. So I stick my face and like the window to the main part of the warehouse was very narrow and it was also dusted over. It was pretty dirty. So I was able to kind of clean a little spot off. It wasn't perfect, but so when I looked out, I hear the officer yell, hey, come out, hands up, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this is scary. Like this is not like, haha, anymore. This is like terrifying. And this dog, I have to tell you, he had a titanium tooth because he lost his tooth in a dude during a takedown.
Wow.
So once I put these things together, I'm like, oh, this is not cute anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm watching this like 80-pound German Shepherd come in and he takes every step I took, where I zigged, he zagged. When I went over something, he went over something. I watched him walk by that window like 3 or 4 times. And and he's following his nose the whole, he's taking step by step what I did. And I'm like, okay. And my heart, I'm like, my heart is beating so hard. I am waiting. Like, this is going to give me away. Nothing else. Like, and so I see the dog like ducked down under the window and he went out of view. And I'm like, haha, I fooled the dog. And before I could even finish that thought, his face was here. And like the light from the room he was in hit that titanium tooth. And I was just like, like, I might have peed a little. It was so scary. And then so he's like, come out, hands up, blah, blah, blah. Don't make me bring in the dog. And I'm just like, I thought we were friends.
Like, yes, I didn't do anything.
So he calls Thunder over. The dog's name was Thunder, canine Thunder. And so he calls Thunder over, leashes him up. And so I can hear that he's several feet away. And so I come out. I'm shaking. Yeah, like, I'm real, like, I could see why this is so scary for people. And I can see why, like, it's really good to train them on following adrenaline. Because I had so much of it to give. And so he's just like, okay, so get on the floor, put your hands behind your head. And I'm like, oh, we're doing the whole thing.
Yeah,
okay.
Wow. Like, that's mean.
And so I got that far. And then he's like, okay, so you can stand up. And he, like, gives the dog his tug toy. Because, like, the dog isn't looking for me.
Yeah, yeah.
The dog is looking for a way to get his toy. Much like it's so like that very serious like situation is not unlike our dogs like finding Birch in a box and then getting a cheese stick.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's a lot less pressure in most situations, but it's but I mean we're using the same tools, like these dogs like being able to follow. So, yeah, like having that degree of terrifying and seeing operational handling and a dog really working for, you know, he was on duty that whole night and he could do that three or four times a night if he had to.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then after he goes, make friends. And I'm like, what? And so the dog like comes running over to me and like leans against my knees like we were like hey cool we cool and I'm like what the hell is that? No we're not cool, you just yelled at me.
Oh bless.
Just like yeah
do you know we had a go at Schutzhund at holding the sleeve, the Schutzhund sleeve.
Oh wow.
And that was incredible, but I have to say like I love dogs and I know that you know German Shepherds and you know, we had my mum had a German Shepherd, love them as long as they're friendly, you know, nicely brought up. I love a German Shepherd. But he had this guy had a huge German Shepherd and he said, go on, put the sleeve on. Okay. And I initially thought, oh my goodness, the dog's like dashing towards me and going to attack me. And they grab the sleeve and it's a, you know, really, and he said, hold on to it, hold on to it, hold on to it. Okay, let go. There's like a bar inside that you hold on to. Yeah, yeah. Okay, let go. And bless this dog, she just ran off with the sleeve and she did a big circle and then brought it back to me like, should we play again? And I realised, there's no aggression. She's got lots of enthusiasm and as you say, adrenaline. But it's just a tug toy for her. And she's just like, yeah, let's go again. Let's go again. And then after that, I loved it. But then we got my husband, Mr. Dogcaster, to do it. And he was years and years and years ago, was bitten by a German Shepherd. And so he has a little bit of fear with German Shepherds. But he did it. He put the sleeve on. Having seen me survive, he put the sleeve on. And he
you first.
Go, yeah, yeah. My mother-in-law couldn't believe that. She was like, oh, my goodness.
This is so cool.
But it was great. It was and when you see the police demonstrations at Crufts, it's so interesting because the dogs are not, you couldn't take a mad aggressive dog out and get them to work. So they're working for a reason. It's not to actually attack you. They're just looking for the toy. Like you say, I want the reward. I want to do well. I want to be a good dog, you know.
Yeah, when Captain's looking for spotted lanternfly, the invasive, he's not looking for the invasive. He's looking for a cheese stick. He's looking for that. When my border collie would, years and years ago when I still was doing competitive frisbee, she wasn't looking for like, oh boy, I get to jump over your leg. She was looking for like, okay, how many dumb things is this human going to give me to do before I can finally get my flying plastic back?
Yeah.
So like they're looking, I mean, in some cases, yes, it's super rewarding for them to jump over you. In this case, the only thing she wanted was the frisbee.
Oh, bless.
But there are animals that are like, oh boy, I get to jump. Like, oh boy, I get to do the thing. And it's that thing that is so rewarding to them.
Yeah. Oh, bless. Now, you mentioned there explaining humping. And, I mean, they say never.
Let's isolate that sound.
But I was thinking, because they say never work with animals and never work with children, don't they? And you do both. And you've done some brilliant work with children. So how do you, because you mentioned, again, explaining humping to second graders, like year two. In Britain. But I mean, how do you, because, you know, I talk to a lot, children want to come and meet our dogs. And I was a teacher and I always you know, have a little chat with them and explain and say, why don't you hold your hand like this when you meet a dog? Hold your hand like a fist and keep it low and don't always ask first and blah, blah, blah. You know, all the things that you tell children. But how? So tell me some of the things that you've explained to children.
I have. There's a whole chapter that's just called, well, it was initially called humping. We had to change it. But instead, like each chapter, and then I'll come back to this, but each chapter is like us talking to like colleagues and saying, okay, well, this is your hardest case. Well, this one's my hardest case. Like yeah. this is, these are all the cases in which humping is part of it. Like your humpiest cases, I think is what I titled the chapter. Every day, something weird. Like I'm doing a class, I think it was like 2 Mother's Days ago.
Yeah.
I'm like, so I'm kneeling on the floor. And I'm trying to demonstrate hand target. So where a dog bonks their nose to your hand, I use it for recall. Yeah, I use it for some trick work. I use it for a lot of things. And in behavior work, I use it as like consent test. Like if I ask for the dog to touch and they refuse, I'm not going to keep asking. Like they will say hi if they want. So I use touch in a variety of ways. And so I'm trying to demonstrate this to this new class. And so I'm sitting, kneeling down on my knees, which is getting to be a worse and worse idea the older and older I get. I don't recover from that as well.
Yeah,
anymore.
It's the getting back up, isn't it? Yes.
It's not so much the down, it's the up that will kill her. And in this case, I have this like Chinook. And a Chinook is, it's a native Alaskan breed that is usually bred to pull sleds over Alaska or the Arctic. Yeah. They're sled dogs. They are not a pure breed in the way that we think of like conformation.
Yeah.
But they are identified as their own breed. And so this Chinook is in my class. He's huge. And and so as soon as I kneel down, I realize I'm eye to eye with this dog. I should have just been standing. And then he was like, hey, mama. And he just like took me out. Like he jumped and pushed me over from the side.
Oh, wow.
And then just starts going to town.
Oh, no.
And in front of everyone. And so when I got home, like a little bruised, but mostly fine. Just embarrassed, super embarrassed, because this is the first time I'm meeting all of these people. I'm like, hi, you should totally trust me. I know exactly what I'm doing. And so I get home and my husband's like, how was class? I'm like, well, it's Mother's Day and I've already been humped in public for pay. How's your day going?
Like, oh, bless you.
When you work with animals, this is why they say just don't.
Yes.
But if you have a really good sense of humor, do, because then you have all sorts of fun stories.
Absolutely. 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 And another thing that intrigues me, because this book has been a long time in the making, hasn't it? And you've worked with animals a long time. And I can remember getting Buddy in 2003. And we went to our class, first dog training class. And I didn't know a lot at the time at all. I don't know much more now, but I know a little bit more now. So I went to this class and he was an police dog handler.
Oh, and, got it.
But of his time, and he was coming up to retirement, you know, himself. So, we're talking about a long, long time ago. But his answer to some things was like, if the dog tries to come out of the crate, shut the door in his face. Well, I wasn't going to do that with my baby little Labrador. And I wouldn't do it with any dog, you know, I wouldn't have done it with a great big whatever. Anyway, so I gradually thought, do you know what? This man is not for me. And we moved to other methods and we found other trainers and you know, you research and you find your own way. But I mean, you've seen a lot of change in the time that you've been training, haven't you? What changes have you seen?
So many. And actually one of the trajectories of the book kind of starts with, it starts with like how things were and how things are. Yeah. And I'd like to think it's got a hopeful outcome to the industry at the end, but it does start with like, I grew up in Maine, in very rural Maine.
Yeah.
We had a sled dog team. I affectionately called it an accidental sled dog team because my dad was friends with this guy who wanted to run the Iditarod.
Yeah.
He trained for decades to run this race across Alaska, this 1,100 mile race with his dogs.
Wow.
And in order to do it, it's much like a marathon where you have to qualify.
Yeah.
So he would take these dogs to like Canada or Michigan or even Northern Maine and race them. But like, that's not all of his dogs. They were just his A team.
Yeah.
And then he had like the backups and the B team or whatever that had to be taken care of. So like we would go and take care of them while he was off racing.
Oh, wow.
And then when he finished the Iditarod and he came back to Maine, he gave my dad 10 dogs and then moved to Florida and we never heard from him again.
Oh, my goodness.
So can you imagine being like a 10-year-old kid getting off the bus going, best day ever.
Yeah,
like,
Christmas. It's Christmas and my birthday and everything.
I've been asking for a dog. Wow. Now we have 10.
Yeah.
And so we had to figure out how to husky.
Yeah.
And part of it was like in the 80s and 90s in very rural America. And also keeping in mind, my dad was a corrections officer in a jail.
Yeah.
And later the state prison, which is even more intense, and worked as a weapons instructor for West Point. And West Point here, wow, in the States is where we teach our military how to shoot things.
Yeah, yeah.
And people. And so my dad was one of the weapons instructors there. So very serious fella. Mm. Like,
and very high level, top level. Wow.
So very hierarchy based, very obedience centric,
yeah,
hierarchy. And he raised his kids very similarly. And these dogs.
Yeah.
And so like if the dog stepped out of line, like alpha rolling, even so severe as biting their ears.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And if they were barking, like in order to keep them with us and not be a nuisance to our neighbors, under the auspices of saving our dogs, we had a stick, not to hit the dogs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we had a stick. And like if they were howling, because huskies. Like,
yeah.
We would have to hit the roofs of their house, like their doghouse, because they were always outside. They were, yeah, outside dogs. They were quote unquote working dogs. And yes, while I understand there are working dogs that do this and live outside and all that thing, we were hobbyists. Like these, yeah, dogs weren't running, to me, at least looking back, enough to justify keeping them tethered year round outside, yeah, for their whole life. But that's what we did. And so coming from that to using learning theory and psychology and, yeah, much of our animal understanding comes from human psychology. My degree is in human psychology with, yeah, an animal behavior background. And I just watching how things have turned and just the pendulum, it
yeah,
swings in both directions. And you'll find corners of the internet that are proselytizing, mm-hmm, one or the other, quote unquote, side. But for the most part, I find people are trying their best to work with the animal in front of them.
Yeah.
And I really think that the biggest piece of training that has changed is understanding that obedience might not be all of it. Yeah. That obedience was this kind of catch-all for saving the dog. Right. If you're obedient, you're saved. You get to stay with me.
Yeah.
If those dogs were barking and they called the police, like we wouldn't have dogs.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Like, or animal control, like if they, yeah, were a nuisance. So,
yeah,
under the umbrella of, well, we're keeping them safe,
yeah,
and with us. So we're going to take the stick and hit the roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not realizing that they're
saying that's like the lesser of two evils. That's right, the path they're choosing. And they think they're doing the right thing. And it's,
yeah,
as you say, as time's gone on, because we've realized more. And, you know, for goodness, yeah, sake, now we can look inside dogs' brains in MRIs and things.
Yes.
And it's, you know,
we're... Isn't it so cool?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
A long way. Yeah.
We have come so far. And I do think that there's so far more to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, even in moving. So I, like in 2015 and 2020, when I talked to you in both cases, we were still living in an apartment in Boston, Massachusetts, or just outside of. And now we have a house in Maine.
Yeah.
When we came back, for me, I was coming back to Maine. I was nervous because to me, Maine is very obedience centric. It was going to be what I called the yank and crank trainers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh man, this is going to be really tough. Like I'm gonna not be able to find a place to work. But as soon as I moved here, like the day we basically were settled,
yeah,
a colleague of mine a few like in the city of Portland, city is also in air quotes. It's adorable compared to Boston. It's so cute. It's like I want to pinch its cheeks. Uh-huh. Yeah, oh boy, how big have you gotten, Portland? But a friend of mine just outside of Portland was like, hey, in Kennebunk, the town that I have happened to move to, Kennebunk Animal Welfare Society is having an open house for dog trainers and behavior people. I'm going. You should meet me there. Yeah. So, like, our car still had stuff from our move in it. And I drove it, like, 6 miles away and was hired to work there.
Brilliant.
And they're all positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
Their behavior consultant there for, like, the public-facing stuff. Occasionally, I'll work with somebody who has one of our shelter dogs in foster, or very rarely I'll be a second set of eyes on a behavioral youth case in the actual back of the shelter, but not often. They usually have us divided, like, I'm public facing. They're like, you can, you seem nice. You can talk to the public. But then we also had a behavior coordinator that would work strictly with the dogs in the back and knowing the setting and the noise and, like, working that very different environment with the behavior cases in the back. And even having two behavior consultants at a shelter was not something that we would have had 20 years ago in this way. And I've seen so many good things and so many misguided things over the last 20 years. But for the most part, I'm hopeful that we're going in the right direction. We've got, like, the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants and Victoria Stilwell and Karen Pryor and all these people got together for a joint standards of professionalism. So basically, like, we all agree to not use harm or shock collars or prong collars or any, like, all of these organizations are now collectively agreeing to joint standards and ethics, which is, like, a step towards regulation or licensing. Yeah. And I would like to see how that would look as it gets closer to that. But I am fully in support of the idea of licensing, at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
And seeing how this goes. But also making sure that there are, because one of the arguments, and I would agree, for regulating dog training on the whole is that so many people have been able to find dog training and be very good at what they do without the gatekeeping, without the financial barrier. Like, when I started, I would not have been able to afford $6,000 to do, like, either Victoria Stilwell Academy or Karen Pryor or Academy for Dog Trainers, but those things are available now online. I'm a Victoria Stilwell faculty advisor. So, like, I get to train dog trainers virtually, which is awesome.
Brilliant.
And I get to, like, train my new colleagues, which is so cool.
Yeah.
But when I started, going back to more differences, like, in 2004, the only real options you had was to pack up your life in New England and leave your dog with somebody for 10 weeks while you pay whatever it was, $10,000, $8,000 to go to the Academy for Dog Trainers all the way across the country and physically be there on site for 10 weeks and then come back. There wasn't a lot of accessibility or ability for people to be able to navigate that. And so I think a lot of the double-edged sword of having everything be virtual, the positive is, like, I get to talk to you because of virtual. Like, this is so cool. Like, I get to meet so many cool people.
Yeah.
But we also don't get the same hands-on experience when I'm training trainers to do their work. And I think that there's still value in person if there's a way to do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the fact that people can jump into this industry and find out if this is really for them, sink or swim, is still good. Yeah. I think a net good.
Yeah.
And I have trainers that I think are the best readers of dogs that would fail almost any test put in front of them because they can't take tests well.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just want to make sure that any licensing or any any guidance on, quote, who can become a dog trainer.
Yeah.
Takes that into account, like the, making sure that, like, as we're improving our standards, that we are also making sure that we're fully accessible to people who want to do this, and but they can prove their skill set,
yes,
in different ways. And that's the piece that I want to kind of see how it shakes out over time. So yeah. It broadly, I'm in support of licensing. Ooh. and regulation.
Yeah,
it's the devil's in the details, right?
Oh, absolutely. But it does need some kind of way of validating, if you like,
yes,
kind, well, I mean, I think, yeah, kind, yeah, reward-based trainers, so that you, yes, know when you do, you know, when, because you see accounts, a lot of us, you know, see accounts on Instagram, and I guess a lot of people, oh, I'll do that, you know, and if you know, hang on a minute, if it's, I mean, I saw somebody the other day saying, oh, if they bite, just like, and like, with their, they've made like a beak with their hand, peck them on the neck, and you're like, oh my goodness, are we really we're taking everything back to the 70s, you know, in a handcart? No, I'm not, you know. So I think, yeah, it's really important that we do,
yeah,
you know, validate the good, if you like, the good, yes, train, or the scientifically, yes, sound trainers. That's the thing. It's not, yes, that we're setting up as moral, you know, it's bad, this is good. Right. It's actually, this works for the dog and it makes the dog feel good or bad. So,
right,
that's the thing, isn't it?
It is. And and when I'm teaching and training, actually, when I made a little whoops on this course I was telling you about through Grisha Stewart, who's fully positive reinforcement, no pain, no shock, no fear, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's where I land, mm-hmm, personally. And I know not everybody does, and that's okay. I put up a video of working scent work with this dog that I was helping evaluate, doing a little bit of scent work, and we had two reactive dogs, one on one side of the room, one on the other. There were lots of gates and sheets and stuff.
Yeah.
And in the video comes out this Malinois, and he's sniffing and he's working really well. And I had forgotten that I wasn't actually in charge of that room that day.
Yeah.
I was still very new to this, and they were inviting me along to see how I would evaluate. And they bring out this Malinois on this massive prong collar.
Oh, no!
And the video. And I had to take a pause and, like, say, okay, I understand that this is going to get people upset. This was one of the first tasks that I was given here. And this dog, our goal was to get him off of this.
Yeah.
We could not say to this handler that day, this is coming off.
Yeah.
We were still trying to get buy-in, and this is the way we were doing it.
Yeah.
And that dog did come off his prong collar.
Brilliant.
And that dog is still coming 4 years later to our training center.
Yeah.
And that dog is doing well. But that day, I was just like, as soon as I saw it, like, I had put that video in there weeks ago. And I had practiced that presentation for weeks. And it wasn't until, like, I knew other people were watching that, like, my brain went, ding!
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh.
Shoot.
Oh. But again, an opportunity to discuss it and say, this is what, yes, I think. And also, I think that the longer I sort of, the older I get, the more, yes, value I see in, you know, when I was younger, I would have gone in all guns blazing and stated my,
yes,
opinion and, you know, and you're wrong, I'm right, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
But now, because you learn it yourself. Like, for example, the first time I encountered the idea of a crate for a dog, I was like, mm-hmm, I'm not putting my dog in a cage. I'm not doing. And then you learn about it and you go, oh, actually, they like it and it's good for them and it's really useful. And, you know, so that was,
yeah,
wrong. But I think that's how, if we plant ideas,
mm-hmm,
with people and let them grow, you know, slowly,
yeah,
then gradually they can come around. Because you know yourself, if you're pushed, you dig your heels and you go, just a minute,
yep,
don't push me. Whereas if you just led gently, you can go, oh, mm-hmm, actually, yeah, that's a good idea. So, you know.
Yeah, and with this particular case, this was a woman who was so overwhelmed.
Aww.
Her dog couldn't function, barely function. And the other dog in the class was also highly reactive. So, like, what we did was I set up 4 nose work boxes, and we weren't even putting them on odor. We were just, can you find food in a box?
Aww.
And by the end of their second time coming out from the sheets, they had stopped looking for the other dog because they're like, okay, that other dog, I can hear it, I can smell it, but he's not coming to me, and there's food in this box.
Yeah.
And so then you see in the video, the dog starts sniffing the boxes, and he keeps looking over. Then he sniffs two more, and then he looks over. The other dog goes, and the dog on the camera goes, okay, sniffs the box and paws it. Like, it's here.
Yeah.
And so, like, and once we got that buy-in, once she could see that this was working, she was able and willing to kind of let go a little bit. Because, again, it's all about control in this case. Like, I love this dog. I have to control him or he's going to be taken away from me.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so, like, I have a choice to make. I could have, or the person running the class, because, again, this was not my class at the time. I was just talking them through this one exercise. But they had come in, like, she could have come in, and that other trainer could have said, take that off, put this harness on right now. Now you've got a dog who's in unfamiliar equipment, who is already having a hard time being handled, an owner who doesn't know what to do and is freaking out and really thinks that she can't keep this dog because he keeps getting loose. And like, and if he keeps getting loose and like going after people, she's not going to be able to keep her dog.
So the
stakes for her were really high. So had this other trainer said, absolutely not, take that off first thing out the gate, we would have lost her.
I am confident
we would have lost her. But by giving her 1 to 2 weeks where she could come in and then we're like, okay, he's working really well. Look how much more relaxed he is. I'm more comfortable if we put him in a harness at this point. And you tell me if you're cool with it. And she was. And she was able to put the harness on. And we had him on a front clip for a while. And then we moved him to a head collar for a little bit. He's no longer on the head collar either. He's on just like a fleecy martingale. Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
And that's the tool that worked really well for him. And so... And the owner now feels safer walking him. And he's, and part of the agreement of him taking living with this family was that the woman who worked at the shelter at the time was the biggest advocate for this dog being homed. Other people wanted him euthanized. And he was, like I said, a big Malinois from a dude who's like, I can handle it. And then, no, he couldn't. Dog ended up in our shelter. So this woman went to bat for him. She's my boss. And so part of the relationship between that family and our building is that she goes to the house and takes him out like a couple times a day, or a couple times a week, brings him to the shelter in the training room when we don't have classes. And then she works with him. He gets tired. He's learning positive reinforcement techniques. He gets some mental stimulation on his own without the stress of other dogs. And then he gets to go home. And then the woman who owns him gets to, like, continue on the training and the work. Yeah. And she has shown up time and time again. Like, she's a brilliant owner.
Yeah.
She just didn't know what to do and was so afraid of losing him. And I find that with our students, like, the more punitive the tool, the more desperate they are to just help their dog.
And so we
can just have some better conversations around that. And I think we'll be in a pretty good place.
But that must be such a wonderful, you know, reassurance for the woman who owns the dog. Because, you know, when you have a dog that doesn't, it's great. When you have a dog that sort of knows, seems to know what you're asking them and tries to go along, great. But when they do have a problem, when they are reactive or whatever it is, it's like, I'm lost now and I don't know what to do. And yes, I am going to get in trouble with this and the dog's going to get in trouble. What am I going to do? So when you find someone who gives you the right answers and the kind answers, it's wonderful because you go, oh, great. Okay. Right. We can, we can live together.
And I've had students come in and they would have either big prongs or they would have like handling techniques that I wouldn't normally advocate for. And I would ask, like, so where did, why are you doing it this way? I'm just curious. Like, did you see this somewhere? Did somebody tell you this? Like, because I think we can maybe address this slightly differently. And more often than not, and again, keeping in mind that this is kind of a self-reporting group in that they've, I'm confident, have Googled me or the training center and know that we're positive reinforcement. So we're not going to get people coming in who aren't already at least a little bit on board. So nobody's surprised. But more often than not, when they come in with these things, they're like, well, I, you know, he's a mastiff. So we have to use harder thing, or he's this or he's that, or we just don't know. This is what we did with our last dog. Yeah. This is the equipment we had. I just put it on him. This is all I know. Yeah. And so when we start talking to them and working with them, they are relieved that they don't need to harm their dog anymore to get obedience, that they can ask and train and work. And that is so, one, reassuring, and two, just heartwarming that they are looking for a different way.
Yeah,
especially knowing that many of them had a history doing it the other way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, presumably part of being a dog trainer and a behaviorist is that it's not one size fits all, is it? So the dog where your boss brings him in and works with him and then he can go back and relax. And, that's, you can find a solution, and it might not always be ABC. Yeah. It's going to be A and a bit of N and a bit of S and a bit of Z, but you can.
And then something from the Chinese alphabet.
But you can, usually you can find a solution.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes it does take a little bit of creativity. And one thing that I advise all of my Victoria Stillwell students and any of my interns who this book is really written for, for them. It's for these people who want to come into this industry. Like, I love dogs. Now what? What is this like? And like a peek behind the curtain. And if they still like it, great. But with all of that, what I tell them is you can come in and think that you know all the things, and that's the dog that's going to show you you don't. And that you should always have a colleague on standby. Hi, it's me if you'd like. And if not, that's okay. But find a colleague to also look this over with you. Because sometimes just having another set of eyes on it is going to be the make or break for that dog. And they might think of something completely out of left field, or they might think of something completely obvious that you've overlooked.
Yeah.
Because you're just stuck in it because you know this dog. So sometimes just taking a step back and asking somebody else to look at the case can really be the thing that saves that dog.
Yeah.
And that handler from a lot of frustration.
I was thinking that as well. There's something, is it stress? I don't know, but when you have a problem that's your problem.
Yes.
You can just shut down and go, right, I don't know how to do this. I can't think of anything. And you try and think of what would I advise somebody else but sometimes it's having that fresh pair of eyes that just goes, have you thought of blah? And you go, oh, blast, I did know about that. I would have, but I didn't think about it for me. But yes, you're right. And it's just that stepping back and not panicking and sort of going, oh, yeah. So it is brilliant to be able to come to somebody like you and sort of say, can you look? Can you help me? And the ideas that you come up with are brilliant.
And I do that too. Like I'll call my friend Donna down in Massachusetts and be like, this is a weird one. Can you just listen to this for a second? She'll do the same for me. Yeah. Actually, you just had Patricia McConnell on, I think, on your show.
Yes.
And so about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, I had a client of mine with this really bizarre case. I can't even remember the case. I just remember this was really weird. And I just remember thinking, this is so odd. If anybody has heard about it, something like this, it'd be Tricia. So I gave her a call. I'm like, hey, can you listen to this case for a minute? And she's like, yeah, because she's lovely and just
she's the nicest
person gorgeous on the planet. And so giving of her time. And so I'm telling her this case. And then I'm waiting for her to give me a brilliant answer. And she goes, no, that's just really weird. But then she did end up giving me some questions to ask the family that I didn't think to ask.
Ah, brilliant.
And that was enough to kind of break through the ice and kind of get a little bit of a foothold for them to be able to help. And this was a long-term client. I helped them with their dog, Murphy, from like 2004 all the way through 2018, I think, when he died. And then she got married and then took on this other dog as her partner's dog.
Yeah.
And so it was that dog that had a weird thing. And so me and this woman have been friends. I went to her wedding. We're tight. So I felt pretty confident that if I just asked the right question, she would also get on the same train and be like, oh, let me try this and this. And I haven't heard anything yet. So I think it worked out okay. Oh,
brilliant. Now, you've mentioned one legend there. Trisha, Patricia McConnell.
Yeah.
Yes, I can call her Trisha. Woo!
I know.
I was like, can I really? Because she signed off on her email, Trisha, and I was like, can I really call you Trisha? It's a real fangirl. Really, really?
No, her real friends call her T-Dog. No, if she starts getting emails, she's going to be like, Melissa, what'd you do?
Yes, what have you started now?
T-Dog McConnell.
Yeah. But, I mean, let's talk about another legend then, Lily Chin. I mean, tell me about Lily Chin.
She's so nice, and yes, she's so good at what she does. Yeah. And I know she knows she's good at what she does, but I think sometimes she has a hard time believing the impact that she has on people and their dogs. And if she ever hears this, I hope she knows how serious I am, that when I say I can't do my job nearly as effectively as a trainer or in the behavior world as I could if it weren't for her art.
Yeah.
Her art to me in just my client case alone has probably saved 1,000 dogs.
Oh, bless.
So being able to point to these, like the dog body language in these like brilliantly illustrated dogs, first starting with her long lost beloved Boogie.
Yeah.
The Boston Terrier. And if nobody knows what we're talking about, Lily is this artist. If you've ever been in an animal hospital, you have seen her art on the walls. And she has this brilliant book, Dogs of the World.
Yes.
Actually, like behind me is like the Dogs of the World poster. Aww, I got it for Christmas a few years ago. Also got Cerberus in two sights. We're not going to talk about it. And my heck puppy. But she, when I actually reached out to her because, like, once I had the title and the permission of the publisher to reach out to her to do the book cover, I couldn't see anybody else doing this cover. And so Lily actually did the cover of my book, and I'm so grateful to her for doing it.
Yeah.
And what she had done, and this is kind of some inside baseball, so I thought of a dog. I did a mock-up on Canva of just like a coffee cup that said world's best dog trainer on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And like a leg and another dog leg peeing into the cup. and then the title above and below. And I presented that to the publisher, and they were like, this is very funny, but I don't think we can maybe make this work. And I'm like, can I reach out to a friend? Like, and I did. And Lily was like, I'm in. And not only did she draw it, she did a way better job than I did in Canva. But she drew the dog being in the cup as my dog Captain.
Yes, yes. Perfect, perfect.
Which is not something he has ever done yet. But the other thing Lily did that was so just as a mom and as like kind of like making this book is like my third, because I wrote another book. So like my third baby, my actual human child, and then these two books. Ace loves art. She's constantly drawing, illustrating. She's trying to teach herself animation. Like she's my kid. I'm going to say she's a good artist, but it's always just so heartwarming to look over and like she's not playing video games. She's drawing all the time. She's either drawing or writing. She's in her head and she's just a very creative kid.
How lovely.
And a very introverted kid. So she has a very rich internal life.
Yeah.
And when I was showing her some of the mock-ups from the publisher, it was a lot of like clip art style stuff that they were trying to go with. And I was like, it's not really grabbing me in the same way. And so Ace, like, did a sketch of, like, a dog kind of growling, a dog, like, hoarding some stuff, and then a dog that's, like, psychotic and, like, humping another dog.
Yeah.
Lily, if you look at the back cover of the book, there are three dogs up at the top. And if you were to take Ace's illustration that she drew and Lily's actual drawing, you can see that was Ace's, like she mocked it off of Ace.
Yeah,
and brilliant. I was like, oh my God, Lily.
Yeah.
Like my kid's art, you did this. You made it real. Aww. And that was so, so cool.
Yeah.
And I hope other people like it, but it's just got that extra level of
yes.
triggered.
Yeah. Because, oh, it's so personal. It wow, lovely.
Yeah.
It takes a village. It takes a village.
It really does.
So I've got one eye on the time, and I've loved, I've really enjoyed talking to you. It's been brilliant.
Sure, always.
But is there anything, I know we've said a lot, but is there anything else you'd like to say about the book or about anything? You know, it's up to you.
Sure. I'd like to say buy it. yeah. I'd like to say. So it comes out on April 15th, and it's the same weekend that I get to present about these six dogs in Maine, including Captain, that were trained to find an invasive species. And these were pet dogs like mine, like Little Mischief, like all of our dogs, like Rocky, that we trained six dogs. Five of mine were behavior cases, and they were able to find this invasive species.
Wow.
And so, like, being able to show that our pet dogs can go out there and save the environment is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so Victoria Stillwell asked if I would present at the Dog Behavior Conference this year. And that is April 17th through 19th of this year. And my book comes out on the 15th.
Brilliant.
So, like, that week I'm going to be real busy and really excited and probably really anxious.
I say plenty of coffee, plenty of coffee.
So much coffee. I'm going to try not to spill it all over the floor this time. But I just hope people understand that this book, especially dog training professionals, when they read it, the intention of this book is to show a couple of things. One, how far we've come as an industry. And it's to also answer the question that my first Victoria Stillwell student asked me, what do I need to know before I do this work? And it wasn't, what is this test, like learning theory, anything like that. It's like, what are the things that they didn't tell me?
Yeah.
In her case, the Victoria Stillwell people. But what didn't they tell me that I need to know to do this work? And that's what that book is. It's like the emotional, like the highs, the lows, the like personal stuff behind closed doors. What it's like being like pregnant in America, trying to like work all the way up through because of health insurance issues. Yeah. And you're also the primary incubator of a human. If you don't work here, you don't get paid.
Yeah.
And so like, what are these things that they didn't tell her?
Yeah.
And not to throw the Victoria Stillwell company under the bus. It's not that at all. Which it was just like this grandiose they.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And when people want to know, like, oh, I just love dogs, but I hate people. What they need to know, I do every day. And what their dog trainer friends are likely doing as well. And while these stories are personal, they are not unique. Like all of us have a case that has gone completely sideways and our bodies are in physical danger. All of us have had cases where we walk in thinking the case is going to be A, but the case is really B.
Yeah.
And all of us have walked into a room where, well, maybe not all. All of us have had a funny story. Like, so when you're in people's homes, you see everything.
Yeah.
And it's the good, the bad, the ugly, the hilarious, and the awkward. But when we're working with dogs, we're really working with these quirky, amazing, incredible people. And I hope that their stories get the recognition and that people have empathy for these people. Because, again, they're doing the best they can with the tools that they have in front of them.
Yeah.
And in the last 20 years, I've made a lot of mistakes and I'm not shy about them.
Yeah.
And so positive reinforcement trainers reading the beginning chapters might be like, she did what? But this journey isn't unique.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of us who started off doing something that we would not advocate for now.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that journey is important to see, warts and all. And that's what I tried to do with this book.
Yeah.
And I like to think that it ended in a hopeful way.
Yeah.
I'm just excited that I get to talk to my friend Julie about this.
excited to talk to my friend Melissa. Brilliant. It sounds lovely. And I think that's important that, you don't start. You start, you think you're doing, well, no, you are doing your best, the best that you know, or not the worst, as you say.
Not the worst.
Not the worst. But then you learn. And and I guess as well, when a dog trainer says to you, you've gone to the class and they say, do this.
Yeah.
I'm quite lucky that I have quite a bolshy core and I'm like, that doesn't actually sound right to me. I think I'm going to give my money to a different dog trainer. But a lot of, there were, the other ladies in that class, And they sort of hung on his every word. And I was like, oh, I mean, he and I had arguments about other things, child raising, a lot of things. And I was like, yeah. no, we're out of here. Okay. and I think that's the thing, you know, so it's not that we, then we found other trainers that were lovely. There was a club we went to. Absolutely. Really, really good. All positive. But it was things like call the dog back to you, do the finish and have them sitting on your left hand side. And, you know, all this, which was
very specific.
Well, yes, but it was brilliant. And he would do it at the class. When I was down at the Kingsbury Water Park, he was like, oh, there's boys over there with a football. Bye. Exactly that. Bye. And I'm like, but he will do it in the class, but he won't do it in real life. And that's what I needed. Real life training, real life solutions. So that's what we gradually moved towards. But I think it is.
Yes.
It is improving, but it's so, in some quarters, it's so slow. And it's not, the trainers and the behaviourists, brilliant. But I talk to people, I say, who's told you to do, you know, like, you know, dominance or I'm not dominant enough. And you go, who's told you that? And they say, oh, the breeder. And you think, oh my goodness, don't listen to the breeder for, sorry, I'm getting really angry now, but
no,
don't
I
listen
get
to
it.
The behaviourist, to the breeder for behaviourist advice, you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That was definitely something that I tried to touch on in the first book, Considerations for the City Dog, was like, listen to your vet for health advice.
Yep.
Don't go to your dog trainer if they're limping. Don't go to your vet if your dog can't pay attention outside. Don't go to your breeder for health advice. Like, the phrase stay in your lane is really important.
Yeah, yeah.
And we all kind of messed up sometimes because, like, all of these industries interface with each other, but knowing when we should say, hey, go to this person instead or go talk to your expert that you trust in this field.
I think it really clears things up. When I know some vets have done behavioral courses and I know some vets give good behavioral advice. I'm not denigrating vets in any way. But when you say, I've had behavioral advice from the vet, it may be good, it may not. When you say, okay, would you let your behaviorist do surgery on your dog? And of course, the answer no. And then you kind of think, oh,
well, speak for yourself. I've got a scalpel like right here.
Of you, I would believe that.
I got those two sides.
Yes. Oh, dear. So where can people find out more about you online?
Oh, great. MelissaMcHughMcGrath.com is probably the easiest.
Okay.
And if they just wanted to, I'm on social media. I'm the only Melissa McHugh McGrath. I'm pretty easy to find.
Yes.
And I'm not quiet. So you'll find me.
Yeah. You stay loud, stay noisy. We need more, you know, more voices like yours in the world, more kind voices. And
thank you, Julie. And thank you for giving me a platform to be able to speak.
Thank you for your time and the best of luck with the book. I hope it does really, really well. And give, love to Ace. And I hope she feels better soon. And big cuddles to Captain Love. I love that name.
He's just watching.
Bless him. Huge thanks to Melissa for her time, insights, honesty and humour. She's a force for good in the dog world. We have the links to Melissa's website and social media at dogcastradio.com. I'm hoping to talk to Melissa again later this year about her scent work experiences with her own dog, Captain, and others. My dog, Rocky, is almost 5 months old at the time of recording, and he just had his first trip to the beach. He loved it. And his first pub lunch. He curled up under the table like a pro. Now, I know some of you will be saying nearly 5 months is way too late to introduce the pub. But he has had many hours training at coffee shops, so I think it all evens out. Follow our social media to keep up with his adventures. But for now, that's it. So until next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. What does a dog order at KFC? A barking bucket.